Welcome to Scaling the Gap, the podcast for leaders who refuse to settle. I'm Madeline McRae, CEO and co-founder of ProQ. Here, we cut through the noise to tackle the real challenges of scaling your business while staying true to your purpose. Every episode brings candid conversations, proven strategies, and the kind of insights that don't just inform, they ignite action. If you're ready to stop talking about impact and start making it, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Scaling the Gap. My guest today is someone that I have been itching to share with you ever since I first found him on LinkedIn. I have been stalking his posts and following him. He's so inspirational. He brings a wealth of knowledge to the table. He has been in the franchising and small business space, coaching franchisor relationships, franchisee relationships, every single side of it for well over two decades. And these days, he runs his own platform brand and is doing incredible things in the world with small businesses and franchising and entrepreneurship. Thomas Scott, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
I am super excited about sharing you with my audience because we're super philosophically aligned and you bring a really interesting dynamic. You have these really interesting take on so many things that we are so aligned on. So let's just jam together for a little bit of time here and share you with our audience. So first of all, give people a flavor of who you are and the work you do in this world so we have a jumping off point.
Yeah. Well, so I started out as a newspaper journalist, photographer in New Orleans when I was in my 20s and got into business around age 30. I'm in my mid 50s now and started as a franchisee in a system called Show Homes. It was a home staging, the original home staging kind of brand. And 2 years in, I got to be the number one and two. I had three units and they were in the top. So I got to be a top performer and I realized, wow, this business thing is pretty cool. I like this.
Yeah.
The founder came to me and said, hey, like I'm having heart trouble. I think you should buy my business. And like a lot of people, it's like, well, I've got $37 in my business account. I don't think that's going to work. He goes, no, get a partner. You'll find people. You know what you're doing. You're really good at this business model. Sure enough, I got a couple of partners and we bought Show Homes and grew it to 100 locations. It was the largest staging company in the early 2000s. We would stage 30, 40,000 homes a year. Really defined the whole modern staging industry. It was a really cool business.
Wow.
I sold my share of the business in 2007 and started a marketing agency that was based on journalism, storytelling tactics to help for recruitment and worked with franchisors, worked with over 500 franchisors. And over that period of time, I've franchised nine different systems and home run franchises. My company I have today is my family run kind of, I don't have partners. I'm not beholden to private equity.
Yeah.
Three franchise brands. We've gotten a lot of accolades from Entrepreneur this year, but Up Closets, Custom Closets has about 92 locations. Dryer Vent Superheroes has about 50, and the Lighting Squad is our newest one. But we're having a lot of fun just helping people start businesses, helping people realize their full value in the market, you know, and not give them to somebody else, you know, and that's a really cool gift to give somebody if they're open to take.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love that there's this progressiveness to the journey, right? Like that there's this, I got into business. It was really interesting. I was highly talented. Someone spotted my talent and gave me the insight and resources on how to capitalize that into a partnership, divested out of the partnership, helped tens of thousands of people, right? And then now you have your own business that's not beholden to a partner and you get to be the chief of the chiefs.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, partnerships are great for some people. Like, so for me personally, I'm an artist. I like to build things. I like to go fast. Like I'm always on one speed kind of person. And I just like to grow things faster than other people. And so that can be really a struggle in a partnership because not everybody wants to do things at the same speed. And I had a friend of mine say, well, you don't really need partners. You know, you should only get a partner if you don't have confidence or you need money. And if you need money, you should go to a bank. If you need confidence, you should go work for somebody. And this, looking back, I would tell you that franchisees will come to me and say, I want to do this with my friend, or I've got a lifelong friend. Or I was like, don't mess up your friendship in a business. It's not going to work out the way you. Businesses are hard and they take a lot out of you and the rewards are amazing. But at the end of the day, like be true to yourself, like bet on yourself. Like,
and that's good advice. Bet on yourself. You know, that was actually one of the pieces of advice when I jumped from my corporate job. I took a 1-year break to be a mom and after the birth of my son, but I
I met with my financial advisor because I had an opportunity to kind of invest in my own business, and I needed to pull out some money out of some of my own personal investments. Yeah. And I showed him my business plan, and I was hesitant, right? It was at the time a significant amount of money for me. And I was like, I'd work my corporate job to earn this money. And I already, you know, didn't know what to do. And yeah. He looked me dead in the eyes. And he says, you know, Madeline, the best investment you're ever going to make, the best bet you're ever going to make is on yourself. Yeah. And he was right, right? He was right.
Yeah, almost whether it works or not, it's still a good investment.
That's right. That's right.
Paying so much along the way. We recruit a lot of young, I mean, I have franchisees of all ages, but sure. I love recruiting Gen Z franchisees. I have franchisees that are in their early to mid 20s running you know, large scale, some of them $1 million businesses doing very well. And, you know, I tell them, like, this is the best time to start a business. This is when you're like, you won't remember when you're my age. You don't remember what you did in your 20s.
Sure. Like
you could fail 7 times in a row and all you're doing is learning. And it's funny, younger entrepreneurs, I think they're raised on tales of Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and just, you know, Gary Vee and all those things. And all they hear is that if you're not failing, you're not learning. They're not afraid to fail like entrepreneurs are. Like, they're fearless.
Right. And
I think when you bring that to any initiative, entrepreneurial initiative, if you're really not afraid or you're just not consumed with fear of failure.
Sure.
Succeed, because business isn't that hard if you focus on the fundamentals, especially in a franchise system where you're given all the stuff that you need.
Problems.
But, you know, the franchisees don't do well sometimes for the same reasons. You just have to go out and do it yourself. And fear is what kind of gets a lot of people stuck in the mud. You probably see that in your business.
Yeah, of course. Right. Fear and attachment to who they've been. Growth is an option, but change isn't, right? You're going to always have a lot of change. And when people resist that metamorphic moment where you have to kind of, you know, when the caterpillar goes into the chrysalis, it melts, right? And it turns into every cell in that prior body becomes an imaginal cell, which means that part, which used to be the foot, could now be part of the wing or could be part of the eye. Like, it doesn't have a predefined space. And as an entrepreneur, when you grow your business skills, part of you melts, right? The part that used to be so cute and chunking along and eating the leaves is now melted. And then it is able to reconfigure into this beautiful butterfly, right? But it doesn't go like reconfigure butterfly. It goes reconfigure out of the chrysalis, hangs there, spreads out the wings, dries the wings, and then flies, right? So when you think that you should already be flying, the should prevents you from gaining momentum, right? When you think like, oh, I'm getting there, I'm moving, I'm going. And I mean, let's face it, in your early 20s, you have so much less to lose, right? People, fear of loss gets outweighed with their delight of what's ahead, right? That whole dynamic of, are you moving towards pleasure or are you recoiling from pain, right? That's how humans move. And when you catch people early on, you can prevent them from having some of those unhealthy mental perspectives that are going to block their success.
We talk a lot about, especially during this, because a lot of these owners went through COVID when they were in school, college, and they were profoundly affected them in ways. And that's a unique age group for many reasons. But what I tell people is, look, like, you're probably used to, a lot of your friends are remote work. The last 5 years, they've all out of college. They didn't go to an office and work around older, more experienced people. They didn't have water. They don't even know what a water cooler conversation is. That's like
a
concept. And so I say, the thing about a franchise purchase is a path of professional development, because you're missing all that professional development you got, but just from more experienced people who've gone before you, at least in a franchise system or in a business coach relationship, that's what you're getting. You know, and I always have a business coach. I tell people, like, you know, I read a really good book called The AI Driven Leader. I don't know if you've read that book.
Yeah, I bought it. I'm reading it.
Yeah, and it's a great book. And it just
says
that as a leader of a business, you should use AI as your coach or attempt to poke holes in your ideas. Anyway, so yeah, but I really like young entrepreneurs like that. I think they bring a lot of passion to the business and they're, you know, they're easier to coach.
Right.
Sometimes people who are much more afraid. I tell a story early in training. I tell people, like, I've somehow gifted with magical parking skills. And it sounds really silly. Like, I can go to any parking lot, no matter how busy it is, and I can find a spot in the front.
Yeah.
Call it Scott luck. They think it's this uncanny thing. And I said, I think what's really going on there is that it never occurs to me, and I don't think about there not being a spot. So I'm not driving around, this is going to be awful, I'm going to have to walk all the way to that back. You know, it just, there's always a spot right in the front. I said, a lot of being a successful business owner is developing the mental fortitude to think like that. You can't listen to those records in your head. Like we tell people, the worst people to ask advice if you're going to start a business are sometimes your best friends and your spouse and the people, your family members.
Yeah.
They'll tear you down faster than anybody else will. Like,
yeah.
Talk to people who do this for a living, who have been someone, ask their opinion. And it's funny. Fear is such a funny concept. Like it just keeps people from realizing their full ability.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's such a shame because people have so much more capacity than what they realize, right? Like there's just so much more capacity. And when you recognize, oh my gosh, like when you climb the mountain of success, what do you see? The next mountain, the next mountain, the next mountain, right? It's why that whole capacity expands. When you see more as possible for you, you can achieve more, you can achieve more, you can achieve more, you can achieve more. And it's just this process of expansion, right? Like we're only limited by what we believe is true for ourselves, right? There's so much more we can do. And then you know, you and I were chatting in the green room about that ripple effect that a highly successful entrepreneur franchisee can have on their community is so profound. And you're missing that if you don't see it.
It's huge. Yeah, it's really big. Like to see what happens there is that, you know, just the effect that, whether we've run coffee shops and service businesses and all kinds of businesses. And, you know, we had a little macaroon stands in the mall. We sold French macaroons in the mall here. There's three of them. And, you know, they had some people that were like minimum wage employees. Sure. They were making a whole lot of money, but we kind of helped give them raises and got them stepped up. And one of them manages like this huge apartment complex now and bought a house and has a car. And I've seen my guys get married. And one of my guys went on and became a content director for Delta Airlines, you know, and he's like, you know, it's very fulfilling to develop other people. And I think if you focus on that as part of your business to develop your talent, like your job as a leader of a business is to develop your bench of talent and to see real people, like it kind of pay it forward kind of thing. It cascades way down to your friend, to your customers. And that's a real authentic thing. Like people really buy in. Yeah. It's missing in the market
today. Yeah. Yeah, so much. I read a book. I was an English lit major. So when you talked about being in, you know, storytelling, that's speaks to my heart, probably why we're so aligned. I love it too. And when I got into the world of small business, I didn't even know this was a thing. I didn't even know that home services was a thing. I didn't even realize that the whole backbone of our US economy was built on small businesses. I didn't see that because in my life experience up until that point, I hadn't interacted with people who are kind of like me, who are more entrepreneurial, who are like love that small business dynamic. And, you know, lest those of you listening, I keep saying the word small, think small means puny. It doesn't, right? Small businesses, I think, what is it, up to 200 million or something, but it's really, you know, those ones 10 to 20 million and under, you know, that's what I'm really thinking about. Those are the ones that have my heart. And I can tell you from working alongside plenty of people running $20 million businesses, that's not so tiny after all.
you know, and it's, you know, like there's, in franchising, I think a small business is being that 300 to 600K kind of revenue range. And that's a pretty common, you could, as long as it's not how much revenue you have, it's how profitable is it? That's really what matters, right? Like, so you're going to have a $3 million business that makes 100, I mean, a McDonald's, I think of the average McDonald's. He nets like 75 or 100K. Like it's not, I mean, it's almost guaranteed to print money, but like you have to have a bunch of them to do any kind of significant thing. Just the overhead's so high.
Right.
But it's not very risky. You know, it's McDonald's.
Right.
Flip side, you can get into a service brand. My oldest daughter, I have six kids. My oldest daughter is an English major and she grew up in New Orleans. She went to school in Ohio at a college called Wooster. And she got out and she goes, I want to go live in the French Quarter and I want to work at a vampire boutique and sell corsets. That was her. She was a punk rock kid.
Yep.
You know, alternate kind of English major kid.
Sure.
I just wasted all that money on this college education. She got a scooter and she lived in the French Quarter. And then after a year, she goes, I'm going to go work for an agency and do content marketing. And then a year after that, she goes, I'm going to open a franchise. And she and her fiance have one of our dryer vent cleaning franchises. It's not at all related to, but it's a very successful little business. And I think it's funny that if you just open people's eyes to that in our society, like anybody can run a business. You just have to follow the rules and serve your life away at a cube farm somewhere. And, you know, you don't for jerky people, like you find the life you want. I've tried with my kids to explain that to them and they kind of, not all of them, some of them.
Yep.
But it's liberating, you know, or they they bought a house, they go to Italy, you know, they're getting married this year, like they have disposable income, you know, and they're just living the really legitimate American dream on their own terms. You know, like still golfed out. They, you know, they go to Renaissance fairs. They're just kind of nerdy kids, you know, and my second oldest daughter's a tri-delt. Like she's like consummate sorority girl. Like she runs one of our, she's works on the Up Closets team as a board person. She's really great. Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Works, but yeah.
Yep. And early on in my journey, I got a hold of the book, Now Discover Your Strengths, which really shifted. I never in my life considered that I had strengths. I know that sounds weird, but I mean, I was in my early 20s and I never had thought like, what are my actual strengths? What am I genuinely good at? I was always used to looking at where am I deficient? Where do I need to get better? Not where am I amazing? And it changed my whole life to build a life and a career and a whole, I don't know, version of myself on my strengths. It really has transformed my life and I pass it forward as many times as I can.
That's a fabulous book. I've used it in franchise support, that particular book. Business coaches use it a lot to understand themselves. But you know, the truth is, if you're focusing on activities that really kind of play to your strengths,
it
doesn't feel like work. It's not hard. Like the day goes by so fast and it's super rewarding. And so we built our whole organization and I try to get my franchisees to do this. It's like, you have strengths, you have weaknesses. You know, the more your strengths you do, the more successful you'll be, the less of your weaknesses. Hire people for that. Fire yourself from those jobs.
Yeah.
Like do the fun stuff. In fact, fire yourself from all jobs and build an organization that will run without you. That's the holy grail, you know, in a franchise.
Yes.
In any business.
Absolutely. But, absolutely.
You have to have somebody help you along that path. Like it's hard there on your own. Like
it
is. It's a counterintuitive set of moves.
It is. Yeah. Because you think in holding on, you're doing a service, but you're doing a grave disservice because you're not leaving space for someone else to step forward, right? There's only one person can sit on each chair. And if you're trying to occupy all the chairs, who else has room, right?
Like I'll ask a franchisee, like, how much is your time? Like 1 hour of your time worth. And they'll say like, you know, maybe I'm $30 or, but they're really good spender. They'll say 40 or 50, you know, like, I was like, I value your time as the franchisor at $500 an hour. Like, so I want you to do $500 an hour stuff. And one of our marketing kind of tools is something we call conversational marketing. It's a lot of chat-based marketing on Facebook Messenger with customers.
Mm.
And it's 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. It can just consume an owner's kind of mind space.
Sure.
And we have a service that you can outsource that. It's $300 or $400 a month. It's not very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the owners will hold on to that little thing to save $400 and wasted half of their time and they get all shape and stuff. So, you know, I think that's really a good example of, you know, you have to shed all the stuff that you can delegate to someone else and you have to trust, you know, in people. Like teaching people to trust their employees and bestow them with some kind of responsibility.
Yes.
And then an employee's never going to do the work that you would do at your level. I mean, you have to be that, have this kind of, it can't be perfect. It just has to be good enough to make the company to accomplish the goal and move on. So,
you
have to be able to teach people.
Yeah, that's right. And the delegation loop can be really hard, right? How to follow up and you don't know how to coach and support and you don't know how to train in the first place, that the art of trust gets lost, right? It can be death by 1,000 paper cuts because there's a mismatch in expectations. Nobody comes to work being like, today, I'm going to be the most crappy employee I can possibly be. And I'm going to do my worst work. That's my plan for my day. Nobody comes into work, truly nobody, with that mentality. They might be like, I'm going to try and skate doing the least possible, right? Maybe. Like, you know, they're a little, had a hard night last night, coming in a little rusty. Yeah. That could be the case. But almost never do people show up with an intentional bad will and intentionally trying to do a poor job, right? That's almost never the case. So it's just equipping people correctly. And you said to give them, you know, responsibilities and to make sure that they have that ownership, that they know that this is theirs to do. Just trusting someone and holding that bar high, like, hey, this is the quality of work we expect you to do, and we know you can. It is incredible to watch people rise up to your expectations. I love that.
Oh, and they will too.
They always do.
It's a very human thing to be given stewardship, or just kind of somebody to be a mentor to you and develop.
Yeah.
So, but that's also the key to running a successful business. Like you have to find those people and you have to take chances on them and you have to be willing to fail. I think a lot of people are just overly afraid. Failure is not that bad. Like even the worst case scenario sometimes is like, so what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Like my dryer vent business has it's a daily cash business. We have two trucks in most locations, sometimes three, and they're doing three or four jobs a day. Each truck does $1,000 or $2,000 a day in sales. You know, it's like, you have zero money on Monday. And if you just go through the week, you'll be okay by the end of the week.
Sure.
That's the worst case scenario. Like, what are you really afraid of? And, you know, when you're kind of peeling the onion back, you know, people have a lot of other fears that they're not even aware of themselves. Like until you start poking holes in them. I mean, like, I don't want to have to go get a job, or I'm afraid I want my husband to work in it. And I want my kids to work in it. And I don't think this is going to work for them. And there's kind of other things that they're not really aware of.
All that mental garbage that's clouding their capacity. Right. I mean, failure is not final and it's not fatal. Right. In most cases, every once in a while, but in most cases it's not fatal and it's not final. It's just temporary. Right. It's the same thing.
It opens up a door to something that's 1,000% better. I'll tell you. Like I have turnover in some of my businesses. People, a good. Sometimes it's not soon enough.
Right.
Like every time I have like that key person that I really put all my trust in leave, I've been able to upgrade the business and have a significant sales increase. Since that was really good, but if I did it again, I would do it this way.
Sure.
Gives you a chance to come at it in version two, and you know, I said just don't be afraid of those things. It's that whole idea of a third of your days as a business owner are going to be horrific. They're going to be scary and bad things are going to happen. And a jerky customer that nobody wants or something go wrong that's out of your control. But the other two thirds are either awesome or next to awesome. Like you just forget about those and just know that you're going to have an equal amount of each three of those things and just used to the idea. Don't worry about it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. As long as your bad days don't start massively eclipsing your good days, that's the keep it on that. I love that. So I wanted to, you know, just take a quick moment here. This is, I'm sure some of this wisdom has been very hard earned. So I'm curious on, you know, let's take a dip on the dark side for a minute. What was one of those unexpected, you know, just couldn't see it coming, didn't know it beforehand, sort of hard earned lessons that you had to go through in some point in your journey?
You know, I think like the most important lesson that I would say I learned that, and it pretty much wrecked my business relationship with my key partner, my show homes. I'm a very tenacious, you know, high D on the disc scale, like 1,000 miles an hour, like, you know, it's just my thing. Like that's the, it's not everybody's. And my business partner, if you know the disc profile, like I'm super aggressive, problem solver, big thinker, visionary. He was a CPA by background. Economists, like super high on the compliance and like complete opposite on the scale. And we had a somewhat torturous personal and business relationship. We were friends. Like I have a ton of respect, so much about from him. And I was doing training on disc profiles and behavior and communication styles. And it actually came out of the book we were talking about earlier. It was quite late. And it occurred to me one day that I was the problem, like my communication style was making it difficult for him. And it would be a lot easier if I adapted. So we had morning meeting every morning. We'd meet at 8 o'clock and spend time in each other's office and go over what we're going to do the day. And I would always come in with, because I'd get to the office at 6:00. I'm an early morning person and I'd have 27 initiatives lined up and I'd want to talk about all these things I was doing. And it was like, he couldn't handle it. It was too much. So it really like made the relationship hard. And I figured out that I needed to have just one or two things at a time. And I needed to come really prepared with documentation and a data set.
Yeah.
Come in and say, his name was Bert. I would say, Bert, you know, I want to make a change to our national advertising program for franchisees. And I want to go from this rate to this rate. And I want to use this other vendor. And here's the data that I'm basing that decision on and a bunch of spreadsheets. Yeah. And here's what I think the outcome is, but I wanted to get your take on it. And I would sit over push it across the table. And I would look at my watch for a very painful 4 or 5 minutes, sit quiet.
Silence.
It would give him time to think about it and read it. And he was a very brilliant thinker, extremely smart. And he would say, that's really good. I like this, but did you think about this problem? And what happened going to do about this was something I hadn't even occurred to me yet because I wasn't down the road. And our business boomed after that. But it took me learning that, you know, you have to be responsible for your own behavior and communication styles.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have the expectation that everybody will just morph to you. If you really want to build something, you have to be a student of behavior and communication styles, and you have to be the one to adapt. And that was just a hard lesson to learn.
Yes.
And it changed my trajectory as a business owner in every business after that.
Yeah.
That's love that. That stings, that, you know, like it was painful. I ended up you know, there's a lot of broken glass. You know, you have a relationship where you're arguing all the time. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it does. The glass never looks the same again, right? No. It can be good, but it's different good.
That's, talk about it. It wasn't a failure, but it felt like a failure. Like for me personally, I feel like I probably, if I could go back in time, I would do things differently.
Right.
But it also, I learned so much from that.
Right.
Allowed me, it made me a better business coach. It helped me see that in other people. I was able to use that story to explain to people how only talk to people that are wired the way you're wired. You're only just 25% of the people.
Right.
75% you have to sell to or communicate with or.
Right. Adapt. Yeah. And one of the things that you just modeled is that silence is not doing nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Silence was holding space for him to process and time. And I'm also a high D, so I don't need time. Like bam, 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 bam. But I also could do something half-baked, right? Because I didn't take the time to look at all the details, right?
So yeah, I call it Alexander the Great style of running a business where you just go really fast. And you make decisions on a decision tree quickly. And so if you make a bad decision, you just have to be able to troubleshoot and make another change course really quick.
Yes.
Not for everybody. Like that takes
not for everybody. Yeah. Dude. It's not for everybody. It can be very harrowing, right? Leaves a lot of gray hair.
These are the businesses that like look amazing. You go, how did they get to that size? So like our hub closet is 3 years old. It's got 92 locations now. It's already $30, $40 million a year business. Like it went out of nowhere to a major player in the closet.
Yes.
And so, you know, you don't get there by playing it safe. Like you have to take a risk to do something along those lines.
You do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have absolutely enjoyed our chat so much. And time is just flying by. So we've got to come to our final signature question here. And there's been so many cool little nuggets and insights about how you lead, how you have to look at people, communication, fear of failure or lack of fear of failure, like high risk taking, but also smart risk taking. So many cool little facets along the way. And I am now curious, with all of this under your belt and so many incredible achievements, and you're just touting, you know, just became a major player in the closet space out of nowhere, right? Do you consider yourself to be successful?
It's funny. I love that question. That's a great question. I don't think that success is something that other people assign to you. I think that for me personally, like, I don't know that I think about myself being successful or not successful as much as am I doing the work that I really want to do? Am I in that zone of doing the kind of, as an artist and a business builder, am I building the thing that I want to build? For me, I think I'm successful at designing the life I want to live. You know, we don't want for much. We have a nice house and my kids would go on vacations. You know, I'm not trying to pile up like mountains of wealth, you know, like that's not really. You know, I think if you treat people right and you run good businesses that add value, they're going to prosper on their own. But I think I'm successful at being true to my own vision of what I'm trying to do and trying to really help people in mass. And that's one of the real values of a franchise system, is it allows you to help people who are really like maybe would never start their own business, but they need a little extra level of help.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think a lot of people like that. I don't really care what other people in the franchise industry think of me. Like it never really occurs to me. Like, but that takes a lot of guts to get there. You know, I think when you're early, you feel like you're an imposter syndrome. And what am I doing here? And all these people know more than I do. They don't. They're just people just like you. You know, like it's just, are you able to do the work that you want to do the work? And is the work fulfilling and rewarding? And do you help other people? I think I'm successful on that front.
I love it. So I love to backwards engineer a little success algorithm while people are talking, and to be able to take what we've chatted about in our chat and then to draw the threads together with that little summary. And it always happens that people give me a soliloquy about what success means to them after that question. It is my favorite thing in the world. And I've been curious about success for 20 years, right? I'll never forget the day I became curious about success. Like it marked a moment in my life. And so I've always had this curiosity about it. And I love what you said, that success is not something that someone else can designate to you. It comes from within, right? That's a really core component. And it's something that early stage business owners and people who are still building don't tend to understand, right? They think it comes from the outside, but success is an inside job, right? So I've taken a stab at yours and okay. I think we might be missing something in it, but let's give it a shot and see what you think. Sometimes I nail it out the gate. Sometimes we need some finesse. So let's see, here we go. So the Thomas Scott algorithm for success is: success equals being in the zone plus building what I want to have plus having the lifestyle I desire plus being a catalyst for prosperity plus being true to myself plus impact at scale and personal fulfillment.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I think I spend a lot of time thinking about how to help other people too. Like, it's not like, I think the one thing that I probably doesn't resonate with there is just, I don't so much see success as my own personal, like I get really happy when the people that I've trained succeed. Like, somebody builds a closet business that does $3 million a year. Yeah. People don't go and buy, you know, do something crazy. Like that trumps any amount of wealth creation you can do on a personal level. And that's me personally. Like, I just,
yeah.
Build a business built on helping other people, like all those other things kind of byproducts of that.
Yeah. I think the catalyst for prosperity in others, right. I think adding sure. that in others finesse yeah. to it. That's what I was yeah. trying to capture there. Catalyst being the jump starter for the prosperity of others and the impact at scale, making sure that your ripple effect is at scale on others, right?
Oh, for sure.
100%. And impact at scale for others.
Love that.
Yes. Well, beautiful. I think this is such a noble vision of success. And it's certainly one that your trajectory is shining out to the world around you. So congratulations on being a catalyst for prosperity in others and already driving impact at scale. And I know there's a stage of still just kind of getting started, right? Still so much more to go. So much more to go. I cannot wait till we have, you know, other of your brands represented on the show someday down the line, some of your franchisees, exciting. And I'm sure we'll certainly see more of Home Run Franchises here on the show. And I'm delighted to have shared this chat with you today. Thank you so much for being a guest. Is there anywhere where people could find you if they wanted to follow your journey more or learn about your brands?
For sure on LinkedIn, Thomas Scott under Home Run Franchises is the name of my company's homerunfranchises.com. You can also look me up on TikTok and Instagram. And right. I think it's called Thomas Scott, but check me out. I do videos every day. I'm a content creator myself. So
there's
a lot to share.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this. And for those of you listening at home, be bold today. And also remember that your approach, just because you're good flavor doesn't mean that your approach is going to be the perfect flavor for everyone. So be bold, but be humble. Know where you have to change. Make those minor adjustments so that your light can shine and you can bring out the very best in others, from your business partners to your team members to your clients and well beyond into the ripple effect of your community. Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. Thank you. Have a fantastic day, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Scaling the Gap. If today's episode inspired you or sparked an idea, I'd love to hear about it. If you're an ambitious leader with a story to share, visit proqsystems.com, click on Media and Events, then select Podcast to apply to be our guest. We'd love to spotlight your journey. Also, don't forget to follow the show and leave us a review to help bring more transformative insights to leaders just like you. You can also connect with me, Madeline McRae, on LinkedIn for more conversations, access to our exclusive tools and resources. Until next time, keep scaling your impact and building a legacy that matters.